Okay, so change of theme from security to social policy and change of technology from one to the other. This is not a generational thing. I do work with PowerPoints, but on this particular occasion, it's a flip chart. I'll turn to that in a moment. Okay, so this paper is a reworking of two chapters of a book that we recently produced at UNU, Chris, on world regional social policy and global social governance, comparing Africa, Asia, and Latin America. So this is the chapter to do with Africa, but it's also a chapter to do with regional social policy from above. There is a chapter on regional social policy from below, the civil society stuff, but it doesn't enter this paper, but it's equally important. From above, really, I'm talking about knowledge networks, non-state actors, epistemic communities, policy communities, policy advocacy communities, that kind of group of actors that we haven't really focused on in any of the papers hitherto. Where am I coming from? Because I'm not coming from regionalist studies, I'm not part of that story, so where am I coming from? I'm coming from the study of the impact of globalization on social policy. What did neoliberal globalization do to the prospects for social policy within countries? Clearly that had a number of impacts in terms of economic competition, possibility of driving the race to the bottom, etc. But the thing that I was particularly focused on, and have been focused on, and I'm still focused on, is the prescriptions for social policy that come from international actors, international non-governmental organizations and other agencies. The advice that, if you like, comes from the World Bank, the ILO, the UN, INGOs, civil society, two countries. And briefly, just to one sentence more on that, what I've learned from that is that we can't talk about the sort of gradual diffusion of best practices or best ideas across borders in that area. It is a matter of contestation. So there is fundamental disagreement between international organizations and agencies as to what, whether they have the right to influence countries in this area and the content of that policy. So just briefly, final sentence on that point. For example, the World Bank and the ILO have very different views on pensions policies. So what we see in terms of the way in which globalization has impacted on social policies is a set of contradictory and conflicting sets of advice to countries. Okay. Now then, which generated for me a kind of theoretical framework which is actually not original at all. It's borrowed. But for me to try to make sense of all this, the framework from which I'm coming is a structure, institutions, agency, discourses kind of framework. So structures are some kind of given. Institutions are very important, but the whole question of institutional stickiness of historical institutions in the African context here, it's less important, I think, because many of them are so new and they're so open to influence. Therefore comes agency and therefore comes ideas, and really the increased importance of agency actors and ideas in shaping these policies. All right, that's enough of the context of where this has all come from. What am I talking about? I'm talking about one particular social policy idea. I'm talking about the idea that regions, when they form, should develop not only, obviously, economic and security policies, but should develop social policies, but more specifically, the idea that regional groupings of countries, RECs, should develop forms of social policies which include cross-border redistribution, some kind of social cohesion fund, some kind of emergency fund, some kind of food security fund, that RECs should develop some kind of common labour or social standards across borders, that they should develop some kind of the articulation of the social rights of their citizens, so rights articulation across borders. And indeed, in addition to that, cooperation, if you like, in different sectors. Health cooperation across borders, disease surveillance and so on, educational cooperation across borders in terms of recognition of qualifications, social protection cooperation across borders, and so on. So it's the notion that there is something called a regional social policy of that kind. That idea you can find in the SADC social policy framework, which was drafted in Johannesburg in 2006. That idea you can find in the AU social policy framework for Africa, articulated in Windhoek in 2008. paragraph 2217C, for example, of that document says more or less what I've just said, right? So the research question is, how did it get there? How did this idea travel? Where did it come from? Regional social policy articulated in that way, and how did it get into these documents? Who were the actors? Who were the players? Who were the agents? What was the process? And so the research method, if you like, of this little piece of work is a combination of participant observation, because I was very much involved in many of these steps, and documentary analysis. So let's tell the story briefly then. Hope this doesn't trip me over. Mapping agencies, I guess. Let me just describe the components of this, and then I'll tell the story of how they all come together to end up with the content in these policy documents that I have just made reference to. What time did I start? Okay. Globalization and the Social Policy Programme was a programme funded by the Finns from 1997 to 2004 that I directed, which was very much concerned with the problem of the impact of globalization on social policies, and it might erode social welfare states. So how might one articulate policies that were, if you like, more social democratic? You know, a social democratic globalization, nothing less, right? Took place for about a large number of years, and it involved networking between people in a number of international organizations. There are just a few people mentioned here. Ortiz, who was in UNDESA and UNICEF, Zelenev, who was in UNDESA. You could have listed a whole number of ILO people, a number of INGO people, but it was became quite a large network of like-minded individuals, progressive social policy analysts, if you like. You and you, Chris, based in Bruges, the research center of the UNU, focusing historically on security and economic issues, then became focused on social policy questions driven by Luc van Langerhove. The management of social transformation program is something that most analysts actually miss, right? UNESCO, not education, but the social and human sciences division of UNESCO, which is kind of responsible for the world social science knowledge, yeah? Directed by a very charismatic person until recently, Pierre Sané, from Western French-speaking West African from Senegal, in alliance with the then president of, minister of social development in South Africa, Zola. He was chair, he was secretary, drove this management of transformation program. The management of social transformation program contained a number of elements, one of which was a whole series of bringing together of meetings of ministers of social development in Latin America, in Africa, in Asia. And within Africa, there were meetings in the south, in the west, in the east, in the north. Most recently, in the context of the Arab Spring, there have been such meetings of ministers of social development. It was designed quite consciously to strengthen the ministers of social development against aid, against trade ministers and finance ministers. So these things were all going on. In the context of the Globalization Social Policy Programme, the sort of thinking within that framework realized, unsurprisingly, that the social democratic globalization wasn't going to go very far, right? You weren't going to get global taxations, you weren't going to get global labor standards, the social clause in the WTO wasn't agreed. So maybe an alternative strategy was to focus on regionalism, region building, the EU with a kind of social dimension to regionalism. Maybe that could be replicated, Mercosur, so on. Maybe a strategy should be to develop regions with an effective social dimension and social consent. Okay, so the idea of a regional social policy, if you like, was first articulated in those words that I just articulated there, way back, about 1998, 99. You and Chris were working with regionalism. Most was working in a different way. Sané has an office in Paris. Luc van Langerhove has an office in Paris. I teach in Paris. Okay, that's an accident. An accident, right, means that we talk to each other, right? And that accident generates an event which is not here, which is in Buenos Aires in 2006. Buenos Aires in 2006, this enterprise organized a really, very large conference of think tanks and UN agencies social policy in the global context. Pierre Sane asked you and you, Chris, who asked me to convene a seminar on regional social policies. That involved SADC, involved Mercosur, involved other actors. And we did that and sort of further developed that idea. Over dinner in Buenos Aires, a minister of social development talked to Zelenev and myself. Zelenev was UN, in UNDESA at that point. Okay, we need to strengthen the social dimension of SADC, right? You know, it's focused on trade, it's focused on security. Where's the social dimension? Where's the social policy of SADC? Okay? By that time, the ideas that I'd worked on in terms of regional social policy had been written up by UNDESA. There were some social policy guidance notes for countries which were trying to compete with the World Bank's alternative social policy guidance notes, and within that context was a set of papers on regional social policy. So when the meeting in Johannesburg in 2006, convened jointly by SADC and UNDESA, took place, there were those documents to draw on. And the SADC meeting in 2006 generated a policy document about social policies containing those notions of cross-border cooperation in redistribution, regulation, and rights, and so on. Okay. How did it get from SADC to the AU, right? The Commissioner for Social Affairs in the AU had been struggling to construct a social policy framework for Africa, and it had been kind of stymied by the Ministers of Labour. They'd been working with Ministers of Labour, and there had been some kind of resistance, some kind of difficulties about cross-border labour standards and so on. So it's kind of jumped ship, in a way, to the Ministers of Social Development, and it became much easier to work. Sometimes they're the same, but not always, right? So it became easier to work with the Ministers of Social Development, which immediately tapped in to this kind of reservoir of support that existed from the management of social transformation programs that had been talking about needing to strengthen social development ministries. So the point is this, I think, that in Windhoek in 2008, the Commissioner for Social Affairs of South Africa address of the AU said, we are going to construct an African social policy, not an ILO social policy, not a UN social policy, not a European social policy. We're going to construct an African social policy. But the day before, had invited a whole number of course, Northern Knowledge Network think tank people, yeah? Help Aid International, UNICEF, ILO, GASP, you and you, Chris, and we were given the draft of the social policy framework for Africa. And of course, there were things that we put into it, quite simply put into it, right, at that point, right? Inject this, inject that, inject the other, including the concept of regional social policy, which then came to the floor of the meeting of the first ever meeting of the ministers of social development across the whole of the African continent in Windhoek, and there was a real debate, right? This wasn't just that some technicians had injected words. There was a genuine discussion between country representatives. And for example, Tanzania was particularly articulate about the need for this kind of thing. Why was Tanzania particularly articulate about the need for this? Because the Finns, who had funded this program, had also had a very close development relationship with Tanzania. They have one of the better cooperation arrangements in the continent, where Tanzania actually, you know, evaluates what the Finns do as well as the other way around, right? And so, you know, in the background, hardly mentioned probably, and I should have mentioned, you know, are the Finns, are the Flemish, who aren't even a government, if you like, right, who funded UNU, Chris. Yeah? So you have this kind of layer in the background, funding these kind of activities, which then coalesce into the process that I've just described. So that's a case study. What's the conclusion? What's the analytical conclusion? What's the theoretical conclusion from this? I think that if we're trying to map actors, if we're trying to map agencies, if we're trying to map influences, biography matters. Knowledge networks matter, accidents happen. Really, if you like, I think perhaps slightly more profoundly, is that this globalization process has opened up policy spaces that appear from time to time into which people fly. And the people who fly into those policy spaces include those knowledge network individuals. And especially if more than one kind of social policy network converges into a policy space, then you can get some policy shifts, right? And this is, I think, a case study of the merging of three quite separate policy networks by accident of offices in Paris ending up in a particular conference, then influencing a set of outcomes. Final sentence would be, of course, all of this is just on paper. Whether any of that AU social policy framework is actually delivered in practice is another question, but that's not what I'm talking about.